So we'll call the Conference Committee on Senate File 455 to order. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I think hopefully this will be relatively short, so if we could just, first I'd like to thank Chair Sanders for his willingness to work together on this, and I think that what we have before us is largely, or is, the non-controversial provisions of the election administration bill. From the Senate perspective, I am fairly disappointed that the proposal we're putting forward doesn't contain a number of provisions that I think will help it with the administration of elections. Mainly, the two major provisions are early voting, which our local election officials have explained would save considerable dollars and ease in administering the elections, as well as felon restoration voter rights. I understand that it's somewhat controversial, but again, putting aside the basic principle behind the argument, when you look at the administering of our election system in Minnesota, it seems like it would be a much easier thing for election administrators to administer if there was a brighter line between who was eligible to vote and who is not in that regard. So putting those two major provisions aside, there were some other things that fell out of this proposal in the interest of getting something accomplished at this late hour of the legislative session. But again, that I appreciate very much, Chair Sanders, your willingness to work on this and be expeditious in trying to get at least this stuff done. So I appreciate that. So if council could please walk through what is contained in the Conference Committee report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I'll have Mr. Gehring assist me with some of the House provisions. So just a brief overview of what is in the bill is the election administration bill, the party petition bill, the provisions relating to uniformed overseas voters, the Uniform Faithful Presidential Electors Act, some language relating to voter crimes and vacancies in offices, which are House provisions that Mr. Gehring will go over when we get there. A prohibition on election judges living with candidates, school board recalls, which was a Senate provision in the Emergency Planning Task Force, which was a Senate provision, as well as there was one provision that wasn't in either bill that is added that inserts annual meetings, so special elections can't be held on town annual meeting dates, and I'll point that out when we get to it. So we're working off of the Conference Committee report, so we'll go through that. Section, and I'll go through it fairly quickly. If anybody has any questions, just wave your hand at me and we'll stop. So Section 1 is an election administration bill. I guess I should ask, how much detail would you like, Madam Chair? Would you like to
say a broad overview, since this is all language that was in both bills in most cases.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Section 1 came from the administration bill. Sections 2 and 3 were Senate-only provisions that relate to how vacancies are filled for school board members. Sections 4 and 5 are the major and minor political party petitions. And then we hit a whole bunch of election administration sections. Section 6, 7, 8, and 9 all were identical in both bills from the administration bill. And I'll let Mr. Gehring explain Section 10.
Mr. Gehring?
So, Madam Chair, it's, Section 10 on page 8 of the Conference Committee report is a House-only section. This comes from Representative Driscoll's bill. You may remember a couple of years ago there was some work on the language related to how alleged violations of voter registration crimes are investigated. So this language brings the statute up to speed with what the agreement was at that time, and it clarifies that basically that the standards that apply to prosecutors when they receive an allegation of voter registration crime is based on their prosecutorial prosecutorial functions and duties of the county attorney. And then there's also language about what happens to a public employee if they violate this section.
Okay, so then Section 11 is one of the provisions out of the UOCAVA bill. It updates a cross-reference sections 12, 13, 14, 15, and 6, and 15 are all from the admin bill. Section 16, at the top of page 12, starting at that section, and 17 and 18 and 19 are all from the UOCAVA bill, having to do with National Guard members using UOCAVA and children of parents that resided in Minnesota before moving overseas. Section 20 was from the admin bill, and then Section 21 starts additional house-only language that Mr. Gearing can explain.
So, Madam Chair, Section 21, and there's a set of sections here, Sections 21, 22, 23, and 24, and then later in the bill, also Section 31, all relate to the same concept. This is language that Representative Sanders carried in the House that specifies makes changes related to the vacancy and nomination process. So one of the changes that's made here is that it provides that candidates who withdraw during the candidate withdrawal period don't trigger a vacancy and nomination. And that means then is that if a partisan candidate withdraws during that time, the party wouldn't be authorized under the existing statute to appoint someone to fill that position. The second thing that this set of sections does is that it provides that an individual who is determined to be ineligible to hold the office and is removed from the ballot also is a situation where there would be a vacancy in nomination and that person could be replaced on the ballot. Section 31 of the bill, which is on page 20, is the substance of section related to ineligibility, and this allows a person to file an errors and omissions proceeding in district court to request that a candidate who's not eligible to hold office be removed from the ballot.
Okay, if we flip back to the bottom of page 17, we'll pick up again with section 25. This was in the House file an amendment on the Senate floor that prohibits an election judge from living with a candidate. Section 26 has to do with high school students being election judges, and this is the House position here where it says the student can be a judge in it. Where the county where the student resides or an adjacent county. The Senate language previous to that had it that the student could be in any county. Sections 27, 28, and 29, and 30 are all from the admin bill. Section 31, Mr. Gearing already covered. Section 32 and 33 from the admin bill. Section 34 is also from the admin bill. But we took the House language because the Senate language had some changes related to provisions that are not in this bill. Section 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48 are all from the admin bill. Section 49 is about cities setting filing fees. That was Senate File 47, House File 763, and this is a Senate position. And the basic difference here is that there is a cap on the amount that cities may set their filing fees at. Section 50 is the new section that I mentioned in the beginning that prohibits a regularly scheduled town election or annual meeting. Prohibit special elections on the date of the annual town meeting in March. Section 51, 52, 53, 4, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, and 60 are all from the admin bill. Section 61 is a Senate-only provision that establishes an elections emergency planning task force that will meet throughout the rest of this year to look into emergency planning issues surrounding elections, and they will submit a report by January 1st, 2016 to the legislature with their recommendations. Section 62 is an appropriation for the task force And Section 63 are the repealers, and these are the Senate. This is the Senate version of the repealers. Section 123B09 has to do school board vacancies and is replaced by the provisions that are earlier in the bill, so we no longer need that. 204B14 sub 6 eliminates the requirement that precincts must have the same physical boundaries. 204C13 has subdivision 4 is a requirement that ballots be folded, which is outdated. 204C.30 sub 1 gets rid of the requirement to submit a summary statement to the Secretary of State. And the last repealer, 383A.555, had to do with a special election in Ramsey County that happened in 1990. Article 2 was identical in both the House and Senate file, and this is the Uniform Faithful Presidential Electors Act.
Thank you very much, Ms. Stengel. Why don't we have, are there any questions? Or we can, perhaps, Senator Eakin, you could make a motion to adopt the conference committee report.
And, Madam Chair, there are no other questions. I'll so move.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the motion prevails. Senator Carlson, you wanted to discuss a particular issue now, please.
Yes. Madam Chair, I would like to move the A37 amendment. The A37 amendment is the pre-registration of teenagers that have reached the age of 17. Today, you can register as a 17-year-old if you're going to be 18 by the next election. Your registration automatically turns into an 18-year-old registration if you do turn 18 before the election. And I'm really happy to see that the House has added the ability for young people, especially high school students that are 16 and older, to be election judges. And that reflects how interested young people are in becoming involved, in civic involvement. We have had many moves to push civic involvement into high schools. We have the young YIF that meets in the Capitol each year. And one of the things that came out of the last meeting was the motion to a bill to have 16-year-olds pre-register. This happens in several other states. And what it does do is it allows young people to do a pre-registration. They have to meet all of the requirements that if they were 18, they would have to also meet their residency, their citizenship, all of that sort of thing. But the system that we have already prohibits their name from showing up on the registry on the election day. So it's automatically, they're automatically prohibited. Let's say inhibited, but when they turn 18 or when they turn 17 before the next election, then they do become on the registry. This is something that the young people had passed out of the, in their YIF, and they really had, they were very excited about it and brought it to several legislators to try to get it moved into statute. And Dean Erdahl has worked with him on it. He's been very supportive. He wasn't quite sure whether 16 is good enough, so I believe that the House has modified it to 17. And I guess if there's any questions, I'd like to field some questions. And I think we have a couple of people that would even like to talk about it, too, Madam Chair.
Okay. Who would like to testify to this? Someone would? Yeah, please come forward, sir.
Madam Chair, I would like to be sure that we get the Secretary of State's office to speak also about the mechanism of how this works so that everyone's comfortable with when they become actually registered.
Thank you for coming to the conference committee. Could you please state your name for the record?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Holden Platt, and thank you, Representative Sanders, as well. I really want to preach like Representative Carlson has preached the value of civic engagement with this bill. There was a statistic that came out at the last election that showed that over half of 18 to 24-year-olds weren't voting. And I really see that as a giant problem, considering that age group is the future of our country. And I mean, another funny little anecdote that I have is last year in my AP US history class, the beginning of the year we were given a quiz by our teacher, and it was mostly things about voting and different things about how the voting process works. And most kids got perfect scores except for one question. And the one question was, when are you allowed to register to vote? And I really saw that as a problem because my friends didn't know when they could register to vote. They just really had no knowledge of the voting process. So then how are they going to be motivated to vote then? And I really saw that as a problem. And some of you have heard another story that I told Representative Sanders of Driscoll, and Nash heard a story I told about my middle school where we changed the voting process there. And I really saw a notable change in morale and how the environment worked. And I really think that civic engagement is really important, and I think that this bill really preaches civic engagement, and I really urge you guys to pass it. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Ms. Struthers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Julie Struthers, the Secretary of State's office. My understanding was the question was about how the process works now and how this would work if this amendment was adopted. We do have pre-registration currently in the state of Minnesota, but it's sort of a floating date, which is why I think there is a lot of confusion for young people. You're allowed to pre-register if you'll be 18 by the next general election. And for a lot of folks, I know there's confusion about, is a primary the next election? And it's not under law. You can pre-register before the primary if you'll be 18 by the primary. And the system works is your application goes through the normal process, but it's in a pending status until you reach your 18th birthday. And then you're put on the voter rolls as you have submitted your registration application on your 18th birthday. So we have that process now. The Secretary of State's office did support this bill. It was a youth-driven bill, but it creates a bright line for folks so they know when they can submit that registration application. They're not registered until they turn 18 under our current system, but they are able to submit the application, get in the queue, and then be on the rolls on election day. So if you have questions about the process, I'd be happy to answer them, but it folds into what we're doing now.
Any questions? Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a kind of a procedural question, and this goes globally to what we're doing right now. How is the individual who might have registered who was 17, how are they instructed if they move in order to re-identify with the area that they're living in and to re-register? Is that problematic from the Secretary of State's perspective as well?
Ms. Struther.
Madam Chair, Representative, there's no affirmative instructions. They are sent a postcard when they register to verify that they, in the registration process, to verify that they were taken with the non-forwardable postal verification card. We do see not so much 18 to 24-year-olds move frequently, and we do a lot of education from our office about making sure to get people to update the registration in advance of the registration exercise. But the only communication that goes out is the postal verification card that verifies the person who is disabled and has instructions on their card for changing the registration if that's not where they vote anymore.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is that sent out within the 10 and 30 days of registering online like it is right now? Did we get the card that says this, or is that come in anticipation of an 18th birthday or the next general election or primary election?
Madam Chair, Representative, my understanding is that that's when it's processed and then they're registered to vote. Just like if you submitted an updated registration card, once it's processed into the system, it sends out the card to be as part of an automatic internal process.
Madam Chair, if I just... That, again, is within 10 days of filing that petition online for registration and or hard copy within 30 days?
Correct.
And that's consistent with what Minnesota's law is right now?
Correct.
Thank you.
Ms. Struther, it seems to me like this, I'd first of all like to thank you for your tremendous advocacy for this issue throughout the legislative session. I think you've done a great service to the young people of Minnesota, to everybody by being so willing to engage up here at the Capitol and to work on this issue. It appears that we need a little bit more work with some education before it's ready to move forward this year. So at this time, I'd like to ask Senator Carlson if he'd be willing to withdraw his amendment. But I hope that you'll be willing to continue to engage and work with youth in government, young people, or others who feel passionately about this. We want to get this done, and we want to do it right. But I just think right now it's a little bit tough to make it happen for this agreement, as we're trying to keep everything in the conference committee report as non-controversial.
Madam Chair, I'm hoping that what we can do is to look at this as closely as we can and answer anyone's concerns and questions. And I think what we'll do is we'll take it up over the next, the next year, and see if we can get this through. I think it's coming around the nation. There's a lot of states that have already adopted it. I think it is something that. It's a big statement of support for our young people. And I know that when I go to visit high school classes, AP class, AP Gov classes, all of those, that's what I do, is make sure that people all know when they're able to register for voting. And in fact, I even put them on the spot that if they haven't registered by that time and they're going to be 18 by the next election, they get a registration blank from me. And I think it's something that really gets people aware. And I know that there's another milestone that happens when you do turn 18, and that is you have to register for the Selective Service. And so those are things that are very important to young people, and it causes you to wake up. I think some of us with the gray hair, we remember the draft too, that causes you to become more civically involved. And I think this is something that I support strongly, that we need to get young people more civically involved. So with that, Madam Chair, I will withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Carlson, and thank you for your strong advocacy. So the A37 amendment is withdrawn. At this time, I'd like to welcome any public testimony or support or concerns from the public on the conference committee report. Is there anyone who'd like to testify? Anybody else on the committee?
Madam Chair, I have one question regarding Section 49 of the bill. It would have been my House File 763, the city's registration for election, for elected officials who are running. Mm-hmm. I know that the difference between the Senate and the House version was that a cap was requested in the Senate, whereas in the bill in the House, it was not. And I wanted to talk through that because both Representative O'Driscoll and myself have served in municipal capacities, and I would like to maybe dialogue through why the decision to put a cap on it came in the Senate. But my position is mayors and city council members know their communities quite well, and I think that putting the cap on is a couple things. One, I think that the message it sends to municipal elected officials is that their judgment may be somewhat in question. But similarly, I believe that we're going to wind up coming back in a number of years to do this again for statutory cities. And if I remember correctly, the last time these fees were changed was in the Eisenhower administration. I think that is an interesting commentary, but I think that removing the cap does put local control back in place, and we trust you to make a wise judgment, and that it prevents us in the legislature or future legislatures to have to come back and fix this moving forward. That's my position. I was very interested in maybe dialoguing about how we arrived at this in the Senate.
Thank you, Representative Nash. I was one, this was a provision that Senator Eakin carried, and I was one who felt pretty strongly that there should be a cap in place, and the reason is because there's a cap right now on the filing fees. And I understand that I believe, in local control too, in many instances. But the caps were probably put in place, I would assume, so that local units of government, I would assume they were put in place originally so that local units of government couldn't discourage newcomers from running against incumbents. I don't know if there's nothing nefarious, I don't think, going on in our local units of government where people are trying to raise filing fees for the purpose of discouraging competition. But it seemed prudent to me that if there were caps in the statute in the first place, that certainly was time to adjust them. But the numbers that we adopted were adjusted then for inflation to be what they would have been when the caps were first instituted, and whenever it was. I'm sure Anne from the League of Cities could remind us of the year that they were first put into statute, but essentially we arrived at these numbers because these were the numbers adjusted for inflation.
I guess my question is, there are, I think that those in the municipal seats are fully capable of making those decisions well. I reassert my position that we're not going to, again, Representative O'Driscoll and myself are both served as mayor and city council members. We want to encourage participation, and there isn't anything nefarious going on. We don't try to beat back the how they contested the role, which is, it's amazing. No. We want to encourage people to run for city council, we want to encourage people to run for mayor, and I think that putting a cap on there is just going to require them to come back. I think that the message of doing is that it sends to those currently in those positions in sectors that it is that the legislature seems to know better than you and what should happen in your I would request if they could look at the I believe that the League's position is that they would like the cap to not be placed. Testify or not, or bow out gracefully. From my perspective, I think that it sends a warm message to municipal leaders, and I know Representative O'Driscoll's perspective.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two thoughts on this. Number one, we also have some concerns from the state of Minnesota that when municipalities or local governments are charging fees for different things that the constituents or others may request from the community, that those fees have to be no more than what the cost of the service is actually to provide. So there's already state law that covers that, if you will, gouging or those kinds of things that might happen. For many communities, a $2, $3, and $5 filing fee will absolutely go nowhere near covering the costs associated with staff time, processing, posting, all of those things that would be involved in an election. Number two thought would be, if there is a concern about maybe things not being on the up and up, what would prevent a legislature who can tell a local community what their caps are going to be to institute something like that on filing fees, say for the Senate or for the House or the governor's office, because right now rules are set at $100, if memory serves me right, from jacking that up to $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 to do that. We're saying we can tell you what to do, but if we still maintain that power to do it ourselves, not advocating that we're doing that or thinking about that, and it's kind of 360ing the issue, it does seem to me to be a little bit of a disconnect. When we tell voters, you go in the voting booth, you draw the curtain, you vote for the governor, you vote for your Senate, you vote for your House members, now you're down to your local elections. Do we trust them and your judgment with them less than how you would value us as state officials? And it's just a philosophical thing that I've had ever since I've been here at the legislature, trying to maintain local control. Because like Representative Mass said, we both grew up local government before we came to state government. So we're territorial, but we certainly have experiences that give us pause to think about why we would want to protect all elected officials who are elected by the same constituency.
Thank you for those comments. I'd just point out that a city can adopt a lower filing fee, but this is the cap that they can go up to this amount. And again, there were caps put in place originally, and completely removing the caps was not something that I was willing to support. This came in amended language, wasn't in our original election bill, and then I agreed to add it to the conference committee report with the understanding that the cap would remain in place, but it would be adjusted for inflation to take into account. I recognize that it still likely is not covering the cost for cities to administer elections, certainly. For a mayor to run for office, there's nowhere near their filing fee is going to cover the amount of administering that election, nor do I ever think it was supposed to, but I think it's important that we encourage participation in local units of government, and we don't, I think a cap just makes it more likely that anyone who wants to participate will be able to do so. So I support the language the way that it is now for those reasons. But I do appreciate your explanation of why you support the league's position. And I wouldn't say this has been a contentious issue, but certainly something that I am strong for. Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't have a problem with removing the caps myself, but again, this is a bill that's designed to be non-controversial. We're trying to take out all the controversial aspects, and there was controversy about whether the cap should be removed, but we were able to get agreement on this. And this is a substantial move forward, in my view. It's at least bringing it up to where it would be if we counted inflation since 1950. So a significant increase as a result. And, so we're moving in the right direction. I think we can address the issue of whether there should be caps the next time around.
Madam Chair, I appreciate you allowing me to express my opinion, and we'll just move forward. I'm grateful for the opportunity to express my opinion.
So, seeing we adopted the conference committee report, we asked for public testimony. I don't see any takers. Okay, so if the conferees could please stick around to sign the report then, to get that done. So then with that, we're adjourned.